It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Drive underway on Fan Run Radio, and the Top 4 at 4 this afternoon is brought to you by our friends at Citizens National Bank, the official bank of the Drive. Check them out. Coming up, Financial Freedom Friday, new blog post coming in, and that will be, I don't know what it'll be. You'll have to check that out tomorrow on their Twitter feed, at CNBTN. We'll post a link at Fox Sports Knox as well. All right, number one, Vanderbilt has hired Candace Lee as its athletics director, making her the first female AD and the first African-American woman to lead an SEC athletics department. Lee had been serving as the interim athletics director since February when Malcolm Turner resigned after 1 year in the position. And Trey, I know you have some contacts over there in Vandy land. Isn't that kind of a financial disaster that she inherits there? Malcolm Turner was spending like a drunken sailor for his 1 year reign of terror over there.
That's one way to snake your way to the top and be the athletic director. She knew everything that Malcolm Turner was doing. She approved everything that Malcolm Turner was doing. And now he's gone, and now she's athletic director. Congratulations, her plan worked.
So you think, or you're hearing that you think this is just going to be a disaster?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a disaster. She was second in command over there at Vanderbilt. She knew everything that Malcolm Turner was doing. She approved of all the financials that were going on. And because she's been around there for so long. She's a part of that university. They don't want to go out and hire somebody else.
You know why, Russ? I'll tell you
why. Not taking anything away from her at all, okay, as a woman, as a female athletic director, but she pretty much snaked her way up to the top. So that's what she wanted. Good for her.
Damn, Trey.
No, I'm sorry. I've seen the documents. I've seen emails. I've heard conversations. I've spoken with people at Vanderbilt about this.
Why did they hire her?
She knows where all the bodies are buried. That's why. I mean, Trey, that was a beautiful shot. You're not going to take anything away from me. You turn around and just slam her.
How about just because they're Vanderbilt and they're incompetent and they can't get out of their own way and they can't manage an athletics department and they don't really deserve to be a part of the Southeastern Conference? How about that?
Works for me.
Number two, former Auburn coach Pat Dye has tested positive for the coronavirus and is hospitalized in Atlanta for kidney-related issues. Pat Dye is 80 years old. He has been asymptomatic for the coronavirus, according to his son, Pat Jr., but he is in the hospital as he has kidney issues. Not good. Not 80 years old. You don't want to catch the coronavirus. Pat Dye is... When you talk about Johnny Majors, his tenure, Pat Dye is a key figure in the Johnny Majors story. That was probably the first big game, big Tennessee game I remember was beating them in 1989. In the rain, Reggie Cobb had the 79-yard run. We tore down the goalposts.
Yeah, I was there.
That was like the first like huge Tennessee, like, big game atmosphere. I wasn't there. I watched it on TV, but just not really, like, thinking we could win, but not really expecting to because Auburn was really good. And I think we blocked two punts and got a couple of safeties, and then Reggie Cobb had the big run in the downpour.
Yeah, it was an incredible day.
Pat Dye stood on the sideline in his – remember that hat he used to wear, that baseball hat and his dress shirt?
Yeah. I never liked him. I hate that he's sick, but, I wish him good health. But,
hey.
I hated him.
I hope he's back in, what is it, Trey? His cabin where they, in Opelika, where the recruits go. He has a cabin in Opelika where Auburn recruits go, and they give him all the casino chips. That's the... urban legend, right, Trey?
Yeah, urban legend. Yeah, Lee County Cabin, urban legend.
Number three,
That casino's about 25 miles away. Keep going.
Doesn't this just make you want to puke in your soup on a Thursday afternoon? Basking in the glow of the success of The Last Dance, ESPN has ordered a new 9-episode series that will look at another legend of sport. Tom Brady will have his ESPN documentary, Bear. I mean, as excited as I was for the Jordan thing, like, opposite end of the spectrum, like, I'm Maynardville mad about this. The guy's still playing. He's still playing. Can we just wait until he retires for the Tom Brady retrospective, please? Would that be too – like, I get it. He's won a bunch of Super Bowls. He's going to have – he's going to be celebrated, but he's still playing.
Yeah, I mean, all I want to know, are they going to dedicate, you know, how many – 3 or 4 episodes to the fact that him and that scumbag coach of his up at New England, Belichick, and just the dump truck full of material, the cheating – just the outright cheating. He's a fraud. He's not the GOAT. You know, I may never watch ESPN again. They can go to hell.
I'm irrationally mad about it. I'm really steamed, man.
What a joke.
Howell pissed off. Farragut furious. Lenore City livid.
I'm in a Roane County rage myself.
And they're calling it the man in the arena, Tom Brady. Come on, man. You're going to give him the Roosevelt quote? His face is not marred by dust and sweat and blood. He hasn't striven valiantly. He hasn't erred and come up short again and again. He's born on third base. Act like he had a triple. Tom Brady, get the hell out of here. Bull crap, ESPN. All right, you want to even that out with some Peyton news, Bear, number 4?
Oh, yeah. Give me some. Why would you even – I would have put Peyton at number 3.
Well, I want to – I didn't want to end on a downer, you know. I wanted to kind of go on a positive. And I've got 2 pieces of Peyton news. First of all, Peyton is getting into the bourbon business. Tennessee residents will be able to purchase Manning's Sweeten Cove bourbon, beginning with a pre-sale starting on May 26th. It's in 5 days. There will be only 14,000 bottles available, with sales expected to reach into Georgia and other areas in June. So you got Peyton Manning. He partnered with Andy Roddick and Jim Nantz in a small ownership group that bought Sweeten Cove Golf Club, a 9-hole public course outside of Chattanooga. And now I guess they're doing, let's see, it says his group acquired around 100 barrels of 13-year-old Tennessee bourbon and left it up to distiller Marion Eaves to blend the new product.
I mean, he'll sell out of it.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure.
I'll buy a bottle. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Sounds good. I'm sure it's delicious. I'm sure it's the best bourbon in the history of the world. A lot better than whatever crap Tom Brady could come up with, that fraud.
Yeah, I mean, he's an idiot. He couldn't make bourbon like that. He's a Yankee.
So. He'd be like Leonardo. He'd be like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Departed, drinking a thimble of cranberry juice at the bar.
What they're selling is whiskey. It's not bourbon.
It says bourbon on the thing. I don't know what you want.
Unless they're, it's not bourbon unless it comes from the bourbon region of Kentucky. They're selling Tennessee whiskey.
They just asked him, hey, can we put your name on this bottle? Yeah, why not?
That's exactly what happened. But it's Peyton, so why support it? Also, in Peyton news, Peyton Manning will return to host a second season of the popular and Emmy-nominated football-themed docu-series, Peyton's Places. I love that show. A lot better than Tom Brady's stupid documentary could ever possibly hope to be. A new season of Peyton's Places coming up. 15 more.
Those things are incredible.
I actually watched the one that he did with Brady a week or two ago.
Yeah, you talked about it. I'm sure they're buddies.
Mixed feelings. Mixed feelings. Yeah. I could tell the episode, they went to Jim Nance's house, and Jim Nance has a par three, like, short golf hole on, like, next to his house. And so they're just sitting here pitching. It's like a 90-yard drop down hole. They're just sitting there hitting golf balls next to Jim Nance's house. And I'm pretty sure I could tell, like, they're being friendly, you know, Bear. But I detected, you know, like when Rick Barnes, every night he gets kind of steamed and like his ear starts twitching funny and you're like,
his eyeball.
Yeah. Like Peyton got one of those when they were talking about Charles Woodson and the tuck rule and that, you know, playoff game against the Raiders in the snow. And I could, I thought that, like, I just saw Peyton thinking, you know, I could just kind of brain him with this nine iron, just kind of rearrange his face, give him a scar on that pretty visage that he owns, just kind of, you know.
And just did not club him, just punch him right in the mouth, crack them chiclets out. If he could make it back to Tennessee, he'd never, I mean, we wouldn't allow anybody into the state to do anything to him. We wouldn't have him extradited to face charges with salt and batter.
You'll take Peyton from our cold, dead hands.
Native son. So, yeah, I mean, but he is. I mean, those guys don't ever turn that off. So, what about Jim Nance just chumming around with these guys? He lives a life, doesn't he?
Yeah, man. Ever since he kicked his wife to the curb and married that, like, 20-year-old. He's balling now.
He's just rolling around.
Yeah.
Is that the only Peyton news? Is that both pieces?
Bourbon and Peyton's places.
Right. When's that golf tournament? Sunday?
That's
a Sunday, Saturday. Correct? Or Saturday?
Is it Saturday or Sunday, Trey? I think maybe Sunday.
That would be Sunday. Sunday at 3 o'clock on about 18 different channels. You're not going to be able to miss it.
Top 4 brought to you by Citizens National Bank. Go local, bank from anywhere. Trust CNB's Go Mobile Banking app to let you safely and confidently bank right from your home or while you're on the go. Citizens National Bank, your community bank, offering advanced security and convenience features that make mobile banking with Citizens National Bank safe and easy. Let's get Sean in here next. Good afternoon, Sean. You're on the drive, Fan Run Radio.
So I got my test results back. I scored a 0, which is actually really good. So there's no blockage or buildup of anything. So we really don't know what happened to me a couple weeks ago, but I seem to have a pretty clean bill of health and a good heart.
So getting your heart tested is a lot like golf. The lower the score, the better.
And then I actually made a phone call to our spirit manager today, which was inquiring about that bourbon. As far as I know, we're not going to be the distributor on it if it's coming out on the 26th, but we don't know who is. But it still might be us. And Bear, it is a bourbon. They're calling it a Tennessee bourbon whiskey. The barrels were bought in Kentucky, but blended here in Tennessee by that Maria Evans or whoever that was.
I wouldn't call it bourbon. That's just slop. I like Tennessee whiskey or Cock County white liquor. I wouldn't drink bourbon if you paid me. Just because it's from the state of Kentucky.
There's some good bourbons out there. So, really, that's what they're going to do next is a Tom Brady documentary? I mean, is that serious news?
That just dropped today. Just came out today.
I think that's absolutely, like you said, it's horrendous. But the fact that he's still playing, I mean, his story's not even over yet.
I mean, this is Peyton's time. As far as I'm concerned, Tom Brady, not even a first ballot Hall of Famer, third or fourth at best. I don't even know if he deserves to go in now that I think about it. Just me.
There's a hot take for you.
I don't know if he deserves it, man. What's he done? What's he done? Stood next to Bill Belichick for about 20 years. Oh, congratulations. Just wait for, I could wait around for Drew Bledsoe to break his leg too and play in that system. Give me a break. Guy couldn't even beat out Brian Greasy at Michigan. He sucks.
I don't know, man. I despise the Patriots, but I wouldn't go as far as saying Brady sucks. I know he's a cheater, but I mean, you can't say that he sucks. I can't do it. And I despise him.
I just got on a roll and I had to figure out a good way to you know, really nail the dismount. So I went with he sucks. Sue me.
Sounds good. You guys got any big plans for the weekend?
Not really, man. No, just hanging out and, you know, hopefully getting out of the house with the youngins a little bit and enjoying some fresh East Tennessee air.
All right. Well, y'all have a good weekend. I'll update you on the whiskey when I find out anything, more information on it.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate the phone call. What am I doing this week? I feel like it's Thursday. I should have plans by now, right? Am I really that old that it's this close to the weekend and I have zero plans? Haven't done anything in like 2 months. Haven't gone anywhere cool. And finally I have a weekend coming up and I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just sitting around the house, I guess. Are you that lame bear?
You're married with children. No, I'm not that lame, but
what Cubs, are you doing this weekend?
I'm hanging out with the Cub, man.
But you're doing the same thing I'm doing, so you are that lame.
No, I'm not, because he hasn't been to my house in like, he hadn't come. I mean, Cub's coming over for probably the next 3 to 4 weeks. So,
wow. Batching it, the bear and the cub together in the bear's den.
I'm trying to decide whether or not his hair is long, dude. I'll send you a picture after he gets over here later.
Take a pair of like edge trimmers to it or something. Some of those. Yeah. What do you call those hedge trimmers? The big, like Brutus the Barber Beefcake used to take around. You remember those big scissors?
Yeah. Lopping shears? No, I've got a haircut kit.
You're going to cut his hair.
I'm thinking about it.
Oh, wow. Trey, do you have any plans this weekend? Or like somebody on the show has to be cool. Folky, anybody? Anybody have like a cool?
Yeah,
going down to the races and like that kind of thing.
I'm cooler than the other side of the pillow, Smith.
You're a dork.
Unfortunately, my family's coming in town, so whatever.
What do you mean, unfortunately?
I mean, not unfortunately. I mean,
Jesus Christ, Ray.
I'm sorry.
I hope they're not listening.
Yeah, they might be. No, they're coming in town Saturday, so that should be fun. There's a lot of stuff going on this weekend. You got the match. You got NASCAR. Bubba be racing on Sunday. I'll be watching that. And Saturday, I don't know. What's going on Saturday? Something will go on. You know what I saw the other day? I think it'd be cool. I really want to go do this. Either Friday, when I was coming down yesterday from the mountain to Old Ben Franklin, they had that drive-in movie theater on the parkway, going towards Maribel. They're showing American Sniper all weekend.
Okay.
Which is an interesting little R-rated movie to show. I know why they're showing it, because it's Memorial Day on Monday, but you know, it's not really a kid-friendly movie to go take, to get out and go driving. Yeah. But I think I'm going to go. I want to talk them into going to a drive-in. I've been to a drive-in in like 15 years, so I'd like to go do that Friday or Saturday night.
To a drive-in.
Really?
You haven't?
Never.
It's pretty fun, man. Pretty cool.
There used to be one right down there where Earth Fair, when they were still open, down near the station, kind of.
I remember that. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, went and saw...
the Ice Chalet.
The Ice Chalet is still there. It's one of the stomping grounds. Love that place. I saw Jaws at the drive-in. What was that other movie? It's a Disney movie. The Apple Dumpling Gang.
The Apple Dumpling Game. I'm not familiar.
A Disney movie. Yeah, it was like a 70s kind of Western, kids Western.
Back in the Jaws after going on that damn ride at Universal Studios, about scared the bejeebies out of me.
You know, the cool thing is where they show Jaws at those drive-ins, and they've got like a pool, like a gigantic pool, and you watch Jaws while you're floating on an inner tube or like a raft.
Hell
out there.
No.
It would be kind of fun.
Trey, you pretty scared of sharks?
Yeah, I'm scared of sharks, man. Grew up on the coast. Yeah, I'm scared of sharks. I don't want anything to do with sharks.
Some guy got eaten off the coast of California last week.
I know.
Pro surfer. Yeah. He didn't get eaten. It sounds like it took like half his leg off and then he bled out.
Wow. Yeah, I don't do sharks. I don't do jellyfish. I don't do all that. If I go out to the beach, I'm going out in like 2 foot of water. That's it. Maybe a foot.
Really? You won't get in the water, do a body surfing?
No, not at all. No, not doing
why
it.
Why even go?
Well, because the beach is fun.
But like, you'll meet nobody that swim around. You won't meet anybody that's it's less risk averse than, or more risk averse than I am. I mean, you get me to a beach, I'm body surfing, buddy.
Yeah.
I could catch some tasty waves, right, Russ?
They should set up like a fence or something out there. Just put like a net way out there where nothing can get through.
Yeah, that's what they should do. All right, we got Aaron Torres coming up here in just a few minutes. Friend of the show is going to jump in here. We'll talk to him about everything going on in college athletics. There's a crazy story coming out of Kentucky. This is the kind of stuff that that John
crazier than last week.
What happened last week?
Earlier in the week, are you talking about the cheerleading controversy?
No, I wasn't even talking about that. I'm talking about they've got some recruit there. I'll let him explain it because, truth be told, I have not read the story. I just skimmed it and said, yeah, that sounds stupid. And we'll talk to him about that coming up here in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. The Drive, Fan Run Radio. Quick timeout. Back with more right after this.
The Drive on.
Back here on the Drive Fan Run Radio, Russell Baird, Trey back with you. Sorry, Folky. Sorry, man. You caught me with a mouthful of potato chips.
Oh, my God. What is it with you, man?
I got some Lay's barbecue over here. What do you mean? What is it with you? You getting
what
hungry?
What is it with you? I mean, you know, we got Aaron sitting here. We haven't talked to him in a while, and you're going to pull a Cosmo Kramer and cram about a half a bag of Lay's potato chips in your mouth. During a three-minute commercial break, you nut.
I don't want to have our good friend Aaron Torres of Fox Sports Radio listen to me with a mouthful of potato chips like a disgusting slob. That would be unprofessional. Aaron, as we welcome you to the show, I did you a favor, buddy. You're welcome. You're welcome.
I think this is a backhanded way of you guys saying – Torres talks too much. We just toss it over to him, and he doesn't stop talking till the segment's over, and I can eat whatever I want. So I'll try to keep my answers a little more brief today because that's what that said to me right there.
Don't worry about it, Aaron. I will actually clue you. The way we do these typically where I ask a few questions and Trey asks a few questions, I am pretty fired up about as soon as my last question is done and I turn it over to Trey, I will be stuffing my mouth, and I'm looking forward to it. Just to let you know, I'm sure you're thrilled to learn.
Get
that,
out these questions. Let's go. You're starving, bro. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, man. Aaron, hope you're doing well, buddy. Thanks for jumping on. He's at Aaron_Torres on the Twitter sphere. Aaron, is it safe to get our hopes up about college football season starting on time?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. And, you know, I've been one of the few. I've never really doubted it because I do think that we get so caught up in the moment of where we are right now. And listen, we all do. And every state's a little bit different. You know, my understanding is you guys are maybe a little bit further along than a lot of places. But listen, we're all spending more time in front of the TV now than we would normally do during the springtime. We're all spending more time reading the newspaper, or online news, or whatever. And it's easy in the moment to get caught up and say, oh my God, the world is never going to get back to normal. And maybe that's not as big of a deal in Tennessee. Again, I can only speculate on what I read about where things are at in Tennessee. But I think it happens a lot of other places. And I only bring it up to say that, you know, I think we get so caught up in the moment that we don't realize that we still have 100 days until week zero and 107 days until week one, that first Saturday of Labor Day weekend. And in the grand scheme, it's not really all that long. But if you think about where, you know, where we were 100 days ago, I think we were all still making jokes about coronavirus. We were all still, you know, not thinking of it as a threat, if we had even heard of it at all. And so if you extrapolate that out to 100 days from now, how much we've learned in the past two and a half months and what we'll have learned not only in the 2 months ahead, but also the month and a half after that, before the start of the season, I feel very good we'll have college football, something I know we'll talk about throughout the rest of the conversation. I don't know what the game day experience will look like, but I do think it will have games, and the season will go on largely as planned.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great point you make about 100 days ago. Our attitude toward this whole thing was completely different. We had no idea what was about to happen. And think of all the twists and turns that have happened since then, from going to, oh, my God, this is a disaster, to maybe it's not so bad, to, oh, yeah, it's much worse than we thought, to, okay, you know, it seems like the that roller coaster keeps going up and down. I said yesterday, Aaron, I'm personally, because of that, because of all that, I'm not closing the door on having the stands jam-packed full in the fall. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm just saying, given how much the information has evolved and just been changing constantly, I don't think that anybody knows. You know, all this talk of 20% capacity and all this stuff, maybe, but we don't know yet, do we?
No, 100%. And, you know, obviously with what we do, right, you know, we all, we're in the opinion business. We speculate. And I think most of us use informed speculation to share our opinions, whether it's on the radio, written form, whatever. And so, you know, I'm not yet comfortable saying on my Twitter feed or on my podcast or on my radio show with Arnie Spanier, we will have full capacity in college football this season. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility either. And it's for the reason that you said, Russ, we've come a long way in the last 2 months in our understanding of this illness. We've come a long way in our understanding of how it spreads and who's at risk and who isn't. And so because of that, yes, being realistic, I would say that 100,000 people at Neyland Stadium, we probably shouldn't expect that. You know, I think that there's probably a lot of Tennessee fans listening right now that are, that might have to come to some tough realizations in terms of, you've had X number of season tickets for X number of years, and you might not be able to use all of them this year. You might only be able to use, go to every other game or whatever. I think those are things that you mentally have to brace yourself for. But I'm with you, Russ. It's just we do still have a lot of time, and I think it only takes, you know, one or two schools saying we're moving ahead with this, maybe even in week one, seeing how it plays out, and then other schools following suit. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all. I really don't.
Hey, Aaron, it's Trey. Appreciate you joining us, my brother. And
no problem. I hope Russ enjoys his snack while we talk, Trey. Continue.
Very good. Go ahead, Trey. It's good.
We've had conversations about this stuff, man, when it comes to, you know, seating and fans and tailgating and all that good jazz in college football. But, you know, you're out there on the West Coast, man. You're getting this news, you know, I'm sure three, four, five times a day with different updates. So I ask this question. Yeah, SEC football, you know, it might be going down and it could be happening without fans. Is there any sort of possibility that schools in the state of California and maybe a few others you know, might be having to rearrange their schedule for the first month of the season.
Well, it was funny. I was joking with a buddy of mine today who's a UCLA season ticket holder. I don't think social distancing and reconfiguring of the stadium will be an issue at the Rose Bowl if I've seen anything the last couple years. But, you know, listen, I think what we have to, you know, it's interesting. I saw Bob Bowlesby, president or the commissioner of the Big 12 today, do an interview where he just basically said, if I could sum it up in one sentence, he just said, we have to be ready for the unexpected. And what that may mean is some teams play with 100% capacity. Some teams play with 50%. Some teams maybe play none at all. You know, God forbid an outbreak goes down in a locker room and maybe we have to cancel a game. His message was we have to be prepared for the unexpected and be prepared for pretty much anything. And so, I'm kind of in agreement with what Russ said, is I do think by the time we get to late August, early September, I think there's going to be schools that are comfortable letting in full capacity into the stands. I also think there may be some states, there may be some regions that aren't. And I think we have to be okay with watching a Tennessee-Alabama game and seeing 90,000 people in the stands and then flip into a USC-Oregon game and seeing none in the stands. I just think that we are setting up for what could be a relatively unprecedented season. You know, if there's one theme from throughout this conversation that I would say, it's that we still do have time on our side. And I do still think that sports in a large way is going to push politicians to make decisions. And what I mean by that is this, guys, is I don't know if I said this on your show a few weeks ago, but when everyone was freaking out about California, there's no way these games are going to get played, I said, look, man, the Rams are opening a multi-billion-dollar stadium here in Los Angeles this year. And when there was talk of the team moving its home games to Florida, their governor coming out and saying, we'll take pro sports teams, I said, the owner of the Rams will not allow that. We will have pro sports in L.A. And so I bring that because I believe that the next step is, okay, the owner of the Rams got what he wanted. Pro sports can return. Now the next step is I just spent $1 billion on this stadium. We got to fill it up with people. And so, listen, I think if there's any way to do it, regardless of the state, I do think it's going to happen. And I do think, look, if the Rams allow 80,000 people in that new stadium, I think it'll be hard for USC to say we can't let anybody in the stadium. But I guess, like I said, we do still have time on our side. We do have to be prepared for the unexpected. But right now, I'm not ruling out the possibility of anything ranging from, as we said a minute ago, full stadiums to some places having full stadiums and some places playing in empty stadiums.
Hey, bro, listen, I'm not going to say the writer that we were talking about and texting about yesterday, but I am going to reference an article. To paraphrase it, they're talking about, you know, if fans come to stadium, stuff like that, and you got to quarantine them for 14 days. Just kind of outlandish talk. So I asked this question, how far out of the spectrum are national media compared to the people locally that are covering each team? Because some of the stuff that's out there, man, I just feel like it's the stupidest stuff that I've read in a very, very long time.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And, you know, I don't want to stereotype and generalize, but I do think, you know, what I'll say is this, is that I don't think there's a sport where the media who covers it has less in common with the average fan than college football. And I don't mean to generalize and stereotype either way, but you have a lot of media that live in these big major cities, working, you know, went to great, you know, journalism schools. And you know, you have college football is a sport of the working class. And I don't mean to generalize and stereotype, but it's the thing that brings people together, the thing that brings regions together. And I hope nobody thinks that I'm implying that college football fans are anything other than fantastic. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is, you know, I think these sports writers, and I don't include myself on this, they just spend way too much time on social media, way too much time looking for the worst in the world, and way too much time not looking at just, you know, facts and data. And I'm not claiming to be infectious disease expert, but I think if you just look at the facts, if the politicians whose careers are on the line making these decisions are comfortable opening up these states, then the facts and the data probably say that this illness isn't as bad as maybe we first feared, as Russ kind of mentioned a minute ago. So this is all just a long-winded way of me saying I just see so many guys in the media, and girls too, that are just, you know, the sky is falling, the world is ending, and it's like, I don't want to be unsympathetic to people who've had this illness, but it's not, and we're moving forward. And I just think there's been too many people in the media that have lived in the negativity of it all and haven't just focused on the facts and the data, which again reflect that things are definitely moving in the right direction, and certainly that way as it pertains to the college football season.
No, I agree with you, and I think we can both agree that we don't know what's going to happen with fans and big-time donors when it comes to the falls. I know there's projections out there, and me and you both talking to people, we get it. You know, there's going to be people that are pissed off because they're not going to be able to attend games in the fall. And I think it's just a matter that we have to get through, you know, for the next 9 months, and then they try to work on things, and next season it could be better. But I, you know, I just think personally that sometimes it gets dragged out too negatively, and then you look at it, and you know we're sitting here in a different spectrum. So you know,
well, real quick, if I can jump in on that, Trey.
Go ahead.
You know, I thought yesterday kind of served a really good example of that. And you know, if you guys saw the story, but there was apparently a minor outbreak of this illness at Bryant-Denny Stadium, the construction site.
Right.
And I saw four or five national media college football writers, oh, this is proof we're rushing too much and we're taking too many chances. And if you look at the, like if you just get past the headline and you read the actual facts, it was that like 10 people had gotten this illness. Now, what was not clear was, were any of them seriously ill? Were any of them hospitalized? Did any of them need to call out sick? Oh, by the way, how many people are working on this construction site? Because this isn't, you know, your local middle school bleachers getting put up. I'm guessing if you need a major reconstruction of Bryant-Denny Stadium, we're probably talking at least 100 people, if not more. That's a speculation on my part. But I saw that yesterday, and I'll be honest, Trey, I had never really believed that anybody is actively rooting against sports, but I do think there are people that have decided that independent of what the information tells us, this is the worst plague that has ever hit our society, and I'm only going to look for news to confirm that. And so when I saw that there was a quote-unquote outbreak at Bryant-Denny Stadium, and I had 3, 4, 5 writers in my timeline, oh, this is proof we're moving too fast, this is everything, this is a major step in the wrong direction. It's like, we really don't know anything. And if we do know anything, it's probably that it's not like that huge of a deal. So that was just an example I saw yesterday that really just hit it home for me.
No, I kind of agree with you on that. And then take it to a different avenue here in our conversations. Man, all of this, you see commits, you know, guys that are committing. And I'm going to say this for football, then I'll say, you know, this is for the grad transfers. We see these people, these players committing and stuff like Tennessee got a commit yesterday for a kid that has never stepped foot on campus besides doing a drive-by tour in the last 3 weeks. And, you know, I have to wonder how much does this stuff stick right now? And then and another question to add on that fact is these grad transfers that are switching up these schools. I think we can use McClung as one of them. You know what I mean? Like, I look at this situation and I ask, is this just one of those things where it's such a tough decision that they're just having to pick just off a conversation? Because you have to think there's not going to be a lot of kids that hop into the transfer portal for college football, Aaron, because there's not going to be any time. You're going to have, a mini summer camp for 2 weeks, and then you're going to have fall camp for 4 weeks. They're just not going to have any time to be able to decide what they want to do in the future. What is your quick opinion on that, man?
Yeah, you know, the football thing is interesting because obviously we usually see a big push post-spring practice. But, you know, one conversation that not a lot of people are having is, like, most of college football didn't even have spring practice. And so from the football perspective, there's that. And from the basketball perspective, it's just fascinating to me because I thought the whole process would slow down with transfers. But what ended up happening was actually the exact opposite, was it picked up. And instead of it being a 3-4 week process where, you know, a kid in basketball would take 3 or 4 visits over the course of the early spring, it actually happened the exact opposite. They could take 2 or 3 virtual visits with the coaching staff in a day, and you had kids committing earlier than ever, faster than ever. And what started happening is a couple kids commit, spots start to fill up, and all of a sudden, you know, you gotta make your decision, or your spot's not going to be there maybe in a couple days. Now, from the basketball perspective, I don't know if it's going to help or hurt. I think it'll lean more towards hurt, because I've talked to people on both sides of it, both the player side but also the coach's side, that says, look, we prefer getting these kids on campus. We prefer getting them face-to-face and really kind of getting to know them, getting to know what makes them tick and if they're really going to be a good fit. And then the players are saying the same thing. I'm going to be, you know, especially in the case of a grad transfer, I got 1 year left to get this thing right. I'd really like to get to know my coach on a better level. And so that's all a long-winded way of me saying it wasn't the perfect circumstance, but it was kind of, to use a bad cliche, it was the hand that was dealt, and a lot of kids had no other choice but to roll with it. But I will be fascinated to talk to people, you know, say in basketball circles in mid-December, early January, about, did we just miss on this kid? Do we wish we hadn't taken this kid? Does the kid wish that he had gone somewhere else? I think it's going to be a fascinating couple months as far as all that's concerned.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought as we visit with Aaron Torres here this afternoon on the show. All right, Aaron, last thing, we'll let you run here. I saw you tweeting about this. You're going to have to tell the story because I just kind of skimmed it. Kentucky, this is not Tennessee fans taking a shot at whatever's going on up there at Kentucky, but they've got a kid who the Kentucky coaches, I guess, tried to, oh, my God, pick up the phone and call him. And his handler got upset because you can't do that. All contact has to go through him. Is that the long and short of it?
Well, the long and the short of it is that the kid ended up committing to your buddy Penny Hardaway over there in Memphis. So another twist in the saga. But, yeah, no, man, it was just a weird thing where kid is a grad transfer, or he's not even a grad transfer. He's just a sit-out transfer. He commits to Memphis. He goes on Memphis radio. And, you know, there had been a report out that a couple schools had cooled off. You know, Kentucky had cooled off. Arkansas had cooled off on the kid. And so the guy on radio just goes on radio and says, you know, the guy goes on radio and just says, you know, yeah, no, Kentucky didn't cool off. We cooled off on them because they weren't doing things the way that we said that we were expecting them to do it. Everything goes through me. And then when I decide basically that the kid is, you know, that the school is serious, I'll put you in touch with the kid. And Kentucky had the nerve to reach out to the kid directly without going through me. And so it made the guy look bad. I don't think there's any way, shape, or form about it. And I will tell you, I had another school that recruited him. I mean, he was a pretty relatively high-profile kid. So, I mean, there were dozens of schools that reached out. But, you know, it just made him look bad. I had another coach reach out, say this guy was a pain in the butt to deal with. And so I bring all of it up to just say that it was a very weird deal. Unfortunately, you could ask Rick Barnes off the record or Bruce Pearl off the record if you get him. Unfortunately, you got to deal with guys like that all the time in basketball. But it was obviously a story that kind of touched locally for you guys because he committed to Memphis. He went, he took shots at Calipari in the media, and it's just definitely a different kind of story.
Oh, it's awesome. I love college basketball recruiting. It's so shady and sleazy.
It is. Well, and it's really funny, real quick, Russ, it's funny because, you know, somebody asked me, like, dude, why do you like college basketball? Like, on the grand scheme, it's, you know, it's not as important as an NFL or NBA. And I said, I just love some of the characters you meet behind the scenes. It's just such a fascinating, you know, collection of people that happen behind the scenes. So this was the latest example, but I'm with you, Russ. I enjoy that kind of stuff. I enjoy these kind of stories. But it was a little story that made its circles with certain fan bases this week.
I just love the aspect of it where you've got these millionaire coaches, Calipari, Saban, yes. They're all so powerful, and there's not a one of them, Aaron, that won't hesitate to get down on their knees and grovel before some 16-year-old kid who may or may not choose their school at the end of the day. It's so funny.
Well, how about this? First of all, the kid is 23 going on 24. So as I said, and I'm just going to be mean now, but I said the kid doesn't need a mentor, and this guy was calling himself his mentor. I said the kid needs to go get a job. Like, he needs to go to Best Buy or Burger King or whatever, get a job. And that's terrible, and I feel terrible, and I'm sure Memphis fans will come after me for saying that. But two, what I would also say is, you think it's bad for Calipari? How about Penny? First team All-NBA. $1 million sneaker. He's probably worth $100 million, and he can't even call a kid he wants to recruit. He's got to call some guy. It's craziness out there, man. It's craziness. So,
Aaron, appreciate your time, my man. Have a great weekend out there.
All right. Thanks, Trey. Have a good day. Or Trey and Russ. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy. We got you. Thank you. Aaron Torres, okay. At Aaron underscore Torres. Do what?
What's the player's name?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's on Aaron's Twitter feed down. You scroll through.
Okay, I got it. All right, thanks.
Stay with us. The Drive continues. Wrap up hour number two coming up.
The Drive.
Russell, Barron, Trey back with you. 865-546-8200. If you want to jump in here as we wrap up hour number two of the show, 546-8200.
I found it, Russ.
Yeah.
That guy, I mean, the mentor is a dumbass. I mean, he pretty much said that, hey, nothing goes through DeAndre Williams. It all goes through me. It's like, and he was like saying that he has evidence of text messages of Kentucky recruiting the kid to the last minute. Like, is this handler opening himself up?
And he's 23 years old. The kid's 23 years old. He's got to come off his parents' health insurance in a year or two. And he's out there with, his daddy. I know it's not his father, but, like, it's just ridiculous, man. And the other thing.
Unbelievable.
The other thing I find myself thinking about in that story is, I would love to see the look on Rick Barnes's face when a kid he's recruiting, he gets a phone call from some guy, not the kid, just some dude who's appointed himself the handler. And he gets a call and says, Rick Barnes, you messed up. You called the kid. All contact has to go through me. Rick Barnes is like, yeah, have a nice life. Talk to you later. We'll go find another five-star.
This guy said that speaking of Kentucky, they think they can show up late to the dance and steal your girl.
That's awesome.
I mean, this guy is just...
So the handler went on radio and said all this?
Yes, the handler went on a radio show in Memphis and said, once DeAndre hit the portal, Hardaway was there from the very beginning until the end. Kentucky came in a week later. You have to look at it that way.
Yeah, I did. I try to put myself in, and I always wonder, and God willing, I have the opportunity. If I don't, that's fine. But if my son were to go through an intense recruiting process like that, I would definitely want to be kept abreast of the situation, but I'm letting him handle it. Because this is a big, this is a big learning experience.
Whatever, dude.
If I see him making a mistake, like, listen, man, you don't need to, you shouldn't go here or something like that. But, I it's important to let, that's a big decision. He's 23 years old. I mean, what's the phrase from Major Payne? You ever remember that movie? Pop the mammary out his mouth. You know, he's 23 years old. I mean, good grief.
I feel like I could do a good job of handling little man's recruitment, Russ.
Well, I mean, this is a prime example of, oh, Bear called you, son, yeah, whatever he said, do the exact opposite. Just completely disregard it.
Don't get paid. Okay.
Coach, there's a man named Bear on the phone to speak with you.
Nah, because I don't talk on phones.
This mentor said that if they had to play by the rules.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I got to back up.
Wait, what?
Bear just said you don't talk on phones.
Not when it would come to something like that. I'm on the phone now talking to you two dullards. You don't talk on the phone when you're talking gangster stuff like accepting $500,000 in cold hard cash for the services of little man Smith.
Yeah, track phone.
Stay with us. The drive continues. Hour number three coming up right here, Fan Run Radio.
The drive.